This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Roshan Kanesan and you're listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Now, I'm sure all of us have heard of some stories of online scams or frauds, whether it's the Nigerian Prince emails or robocallers asking us for our OTP passwords. Now, as we go more online, including our online banking, security becomes a very important issue. To discuss this and ways that we can make sure that we are doing our best to protect ourselves online, I have on the line Shubhashish Bose, Business Segment Leader of Fraud Security and Compliance with FICO out of Singapore. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roshan. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Bose, why don't you give us an outlay of what real-time payments and financial crime, what the scene looks like today?
Absolutely, Roshan. So what's happening these days, if you just take a pause and look around, I think what you'll see is that the world is very different as compared to 10, 15 years ago. Gone are the days we would go push ourselves into a mall for shopping. Everything is on e-commerce. When it comes to payments, right, there was a time when we had relationships with the banks, tellers, and the bank officers. These days, they don't even know us, right? Everything is through digitization. Everything has been, kind of on the mobile phones or on online channels. Now, one good thing that is happening is that this is driving a lot of growth, right? I mean, there are amazing stories of financial inclusion, unbanked customers getting access to bank accounts and so on and so forth in many countries around Southeast Asia. But because of the speed and agility of these payments in the digitization mode, that's also fueling up a lot of fraud and financial crime in this area, right? I think from a fraudster perspective, it's a very lucrative angle to be able to spend some time learning some tricks and techniques to be able to do frauds remotely through, entirely different countries. They could access certain accounts and then go and, pocket that money. So what is happening, if you take a look under the hood, is that a lot of these countries in the Southeast Asian region, they have opened up what we call a real-time payments platform, right? So let's start by taking an example from Malaysia, right? So Malaysia, as we know, early this year, launched a real-time retail payments framework, or RPP in short, which was, done by Paynet, which is the payments central kind of switching system in Malaysia, right? And as part of that, they launched a service called Do It Now, which is basically a way for consumers to transfer money and pay anybody at any time of the day, right? So all they need to do is basically have Do It Now registered with their specific mobile banking or internet banking application of the bank and use it to pay anybody by using their mobile number, by using their unique entity number, and so on and so forth. Now, when they do that, money arrives instantaneously, right? So gone are those days when we would have some hours or a few days in between the payment and the settlement. These are real-time payments, and hence it means instant gratification for the fraudsters. So that's really what is happening, Roshan. I think the real-time payments platform has opened up a new era of fraud, capabilities to the fraudsters and perpetrators in this area.
I mean, yeah, personally, I love the convenience and the speed that instant transfers provide. But yes, with that comes this bigger online risk. Anything that we put online, we're learning more and more that there is a certain element of risk to it. So, Bose, could you just, before we get into what we can do to protect ourselves, what are some of the common financial crimes that you're observing online?
So in terms of the fraudsters, right, I think we all have heard about phishing, right? And that's out there for a number of years, right? And I'm pretty sure that most of the consumers, end consumers, they are, reading the emails and the notification that their banks are sending to them to be educated with what and what not to do. Right. But still, there are, things that fall through and some customers give in to this. Of course, there is also a level of change, a level of, a different form factor of phishing that has evolved, right? So let me give you some examples. So these days, what is happening is that parents, they are posting pictures of their kids or friends, and they're tagging them. That is one. Second, at times, they are, providing things like details about their names, date of birth, and so on and so forth. To a fraudster, all of this is kind of, if you might think that, that's not enough information to defraud me, but then it's all building up. So once they have this kind of social engineering aspects in terms of understanding the names and date of birth and stuff like that, mother's maiden name and stuff like that, what they would then do is that they would pretend to be someone calling from the bank, and they would call that particular person, and then they would say that, there's some issue with your account. We need to fix it immediately. I'm online with you right now. I'm initiating a process here, which, you might need to give me a one-time password, right? So what is happening is that in this process, the unsuspecting consumer, right, is falling in for this trap, and, he's providing his credentials. Maybe he's given a fake website where he's asked to log in, and he doesn't notice that it's not the usual website of his bank, but something which is a mimic, which is a copy. And then they enter their credentials, the username, password, right? And then with that, the fraudster then takes it to the next level, initiates a transaction, gets the customer to relay his actual one-time password, right? And that's something which is the power of these things, right? The way these things are, embroiled into this entire fraud scenario is that the consumer doesn't even get a chance to kind of, have any suspicion raised, right? So that is one, the phishing and the forms of phishing. The second thing that is happening is the use of malwares and these botnets and stuff like that, right? I mean, to you and me, these are like, malicious software, right? But these things can do a lot, right? So to give you an example, in India, which is, one of the pioneers in terms of the real-time payment setup, they have a system called the Unified Payments Interface, right? So in that, what happens is that, again, you can make anytime-to-anytime payments, anywhere-to-anywhere payments, and you can use any token, and these tokens could be email address, it could be a mobile number, and so on and so forth. Now, what the fraudsters have done there is that since it's a big Android market, and Androids are particularly susceptible to malwares. So what the fraudsters have done is that they have installed malwares into the unsuspecting phones of the consumers. And there is a one-time password, the SMS OTP being sent to the customer is not even on the phone because the malware is transmitting that OTP behind the scenes, right? And the consumer doesn't even know all of this is happening, right? So these are some of the ways in which the fraudsters have kind of managed to do these large-scale social engineering events and be able to siphon off lots and lots of money from customers' accounts. India is a very good example. We have situations like that in other countries. Thailand, Malaysia also has some of these. We have got news from Philippines who also have a similar real-time payment setup. Another thing that these guys do is that for corporate payments specifically, what they're doing is that they create these fake invoices, right? So let's say I'm doing a renovation of my house, right? And I'm posting pictures on social engineering, like on Facebook, I'm posting pictures. This is how my house looks like now. And these are some of the changes that I'm doing and stuff like that. So to a fraudster, again, this is a good, starting point. So then, okay, fine. Now that I get this, let me create a fake invoice, right? And kind of, I know that this particular guy is kind of getting these house improvement project undergoing. Let me give him an invoice for $50,000. And in that process, let me fake the name of the organization, which perhaps, again, something he can figure out through social engineering. It's that ABC corporate company which is doing the project for me. So they put that name, but they change the bank account. They put it to their own bank account, which is, let's say, an account somewhere far removed in Russia. Right now, to me, I just think, hey, this looks like a normal invoice. This is what these guys have done. Let me go ahead and pay. Now, back in the old days, we had a time window, right? Even if I make a mistake, I can go back to the bank and say, hey, please stop this payment. But now with these real-time payments, it's gone, right? And that's one of the key things, the message that, you know, is out there, is that this is instant gratification for the fraudsters, right? And hence, consumers need to be always on the alert for any suspicious activity.
Right. So, yeah, you've highlighted quite a few things there, Bose. One of them is how much data we put out, because there is always this idea that it's harmless. I mean, what does it matter if someone knows my mother's name or someone knows what my baby's name is or whether I did renovation? But it's this engineering of all this data together makes a plausible makes the ability for someone to call you up and pretend to be someone else. That's what I'm gathering from what you're saying. And we're going to talk about best practices and how we can protect ourselves in just a little bit. You're tuned in to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. This morning, I have on the line with me Subhashish Bose, Business Segment Leader for Fraud, Security and Compliance at FICO out of Singapore. Now, Bose, as a consumer, what can I do to protect myself better?
Okay, absolutely. So I think one key, one key point that, as we were discussing earlier, is to be very mindful of the amount of information we reveal on social engineering or on the social, networking sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, and so on and so forth, right? And whenever there is personally identifiable data, right, and that's something, you know, we think, as you mentioned, Roshan, that, hey, by isolation, my mother's maiden name is useless, but to a fraudster, it's one piece of information which he is kind of putting up with the rest of the things. And then he has a very strong story at the end, right? So I'll give you an example. There is this, you mentioned in the US, there has been quite a few such scenarios. In fact, one other thing that is happening in the Western region, and I think to some aspect in some countries in the Asia Pacific, is the sudden rise in the use of synthetics, right? Synthetic identities. So what that means is that the fraudsters are kind of taking some bits of information that they have gathered from social engineering and using that to kind of, you know, create a fake, let's say, a driver's license ID, but then use a name that they have gathered from a social engineering. So the name is authentic, it's somebody, but the driver's license number is kind of, you know, completely made up. And then the rest of the details could be a combination of half true, half synthetic. Now, alarmingly, right, what is being also seen is that a lot of these fraudsters are now targeting, young kids, right, college grads. Why? Very simple, because these college grads, they have zero credit history, right? They haven't done any accounts with any bank so far. So their credit history is blank slate, right? And to a bank to identify that their identity, that these kids' identities might have been stolen, is virtually impossible to identify. Let me give you the example of a case that happened recently from Ipoh in Malaysia, right? So there were these six friends who were conned into being money mules. So what happens is, as these fraudsters, they try to steal the money, and once they have stolen the money, they will want to transfer that money into their own accounts so that they can use it. But in order to do so, they also don't want to leave any trail behind, right? Of course, if it's easy to identify that this is the account where all this money is going, let's go ahead and talk to the respective country, the legislation, and the bank, and get that account frozen. So what they would do is that they would hire these layers of people, right? And what they would say is that, hey, let me give you $75 per account that you can, you know, offer to, you know, use to layer this money. Or let's say, even if you go ahead and want to open up new accounts with the banks, right, I'll give you whatever, $100 per account, because it's a new account, the price goes up. So all of these six guys, some of them were unemployed, some of them looked at it and said, hey, there is nothing to lose. This is like a quick way of making some money. So this is how these guys got involved. And in the process, they ended up, you know, using these accounts as money mules. Often these perpetrators are also targeting young people, college grads because, you know, it's a good pocket money, right? I mean, all you need to do is to go to a bank, open an account and get $75. Wow, that's a no-brainer. Let me do that, right? So this is how this money mule system is evolving.
So Bose, why is this important for us to know? What can we do about it?
So of course, first was the social engineering aspect. Never give out too many details that you don't have to on the online channels. The second is don't fall for scams, right? And this is where, you know, I pointed out the money mule scenario. Then there are all these, you know, love scams, right? Nigeria scams that we have heard about for a long time, where people would kind of set up these online dating kind of profiles and then lure old women, old men into kind of, you know, sending them some money. That is another one. Then we have situations where the identity is stolen. So I talked about synthetic identities and how young people are also losing their identities in that way. And then the last thing that I would say is that always be very, very careful in terms of, giving out your details on the phone, right? So I'm sure many of you have kind of, you know, seen those emails or newsletters from the banks which state very clearly, we would never ask you for a one-time password. We would never ask you for your login password, right? So these are the things that, you know, consumers need to be very, very aware of. Don't click on, you know, links. I'll give an example. So there was this lady who kind of was helping her friends because there was a funeral that was taking place. It's a very grim situation, right? So all she did was that she Googled up funeral services. And the very first hit that she saw on Google, right, she thought that, okay, in the interest of time, let me just go with that. So she pressed on that phone, this particular person, right? And that phone actually ended up with a fraudster. And the fraudster was like, hey, let me help you out. Do you have this mobile app that is, you know, one of the apps which is called Google Pay? That's something I think, you know, is getting popular these days as well, in this region as well, right? So it's a wallet application. And then once the person, that person clicked on that link, it was a Google Docs. And that Google Docs had a malware. That malware embedded itself into the phone and very quickly siphoned off the OTP information in a span of about hardly 5 or 10 minutes. The customer, that particular friend who was helping out, she had approximately $2,000 taken from her account, right? So, and most of it was, again, gone. It was irrecoverable, right? So that, again, brings us to the point that, you know, when we are under stress or when, once we are, you know, in situations where, you know, we have to act fast, that's where we end up doing these things. And it's very hard to determine also, right? So from that perspective, clicking on links and clicking on, you know, external documents, that's something we need to be very careful of. And especially if you are an Android user, because thankfully iPhones, iOS have a lot of security inbuilt, which kind of, you know, is hard to defeat. And hence Android phones are more susceptible there.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. Very in-depth, and basically it comes down to don't give out your OTP, don't give out information unnecessarily. And I think in Malaysia, it's quite common for people to call us pretending to be the bank. And from my personal experience, if you ever face something like that and you're not sure, to ask them for their extension number and call the bank using the official bank phone number. That's at least a way that makes you feel more secure about that phone call. Bose, before I let you go, next week is Christmas, and this time of year typically sees a peak when it comes to online shopping. Does that mean that we should be more wary about fraud and scams on this front?
So fraudsters are also, as we were talking, Roshan, fraudsters are very smart people, right? So they know that if they target these peaks, right? So things like festive season is one of them. Another area could be like, you know, a big sports event, like we have the World Cup, right? Sometime back, right? So what these fraudsters would do is that they would try and attack those events because there are so many of these transactions going on, right? And if you look at the underlying banks of that particular country, they're already overwhelmed with so many transactions. So it's kind of an easy miss sometimes for the banks to kind of, you know, not catch that fraud. So yes, fraudsters do target festive seasons. Historically, you know, we have always seen around Christmas, there's a peak. Also during Chinese New Year, in some of the countries in this region, there is a peak because there's a lot of spending. In that time, we buy gifts for each other. So that's where fraudsters do target. So I would say that, yeah, that would be a time where we need to be doubly sure and doubly suspicious of any, you know, kind of suspicious activity going on in terms of these phishing or other events.
And on that note, thank you for joining us on the line today, Bose. This has been an insightful conversation and lots to think about here, but also lots to work with going forward.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Roshan. It was a pleasure to be here.
Now, I was speaking to Subhashish Bose, Business Segment Leader for Fraud, Security and Compliance at FICO based out of Singapore. This was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Up next is the 10 a.m. News Bulletin and then Enterprise. I'm Roshan Kanisan, signing off for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.